Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another different edition of our program, Dare to Be Different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio stream, MediaWave 1548, it's Satellite Islam. And we are now getting into, you know, nearing, I don't know if it's the correct word, but we are entering into summer. We've had the weather that's quite topsy-turvy, and we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, and that's Andrea Durham, and she's from the southern part of the country, Southern Cape. And she has the most beautiful environment which she comes in from, and always willing to share. She's written so many articles, so many books, and there's so much that we're going to be learning from her, and we always do learn from her. Hi, good morning, Andrea. Am I right? You come from Southern Cape, is that right? Because I keep on getting confused.
Well, I don't blame you, because we're here in the, officially, the Western Cape, but really it isn't west at all. In fact, it is south, and that makes it sort of west of the Eastern Cape, but still south. So yes, it does get confused.
Well, so is it southeast, southwest, or Western Cape? I don't really know, you know, because when I speak to people, they say, no, in the south of the... I say, but I don't understand that, you know, Western Cape, they've got something. It's not really Western Cape. And it's not Eastern Cape either. So south, then what do you call southeastern? Please help me, Andrea.
We are very much south. Geographically, we are south. But when one takes the orientation in regard to the province names, then it gets very confusing.
Yeah, because you say Western Cape and then you're south. So, you know, that's what I'm looking. When they talk about Wales, they talk about southern Wales. And I'm not even sure what that means.
Well, of course, the Southern Cape really is the most southernmost point of South Africa. It's definitely nowhere near Cape Town. It's quite a lot closer to my house. We maybe just slightly off that, but very slightly.
Well, thank you very much for that. And, you know, these are very confusing when you talk to people and say, well, where do you stay? This is Western Cape, but where? South of the... I'm not even sure any longer. But thank you, Andrea. And, you know, I must say, you live in the most beautiful part of the world, and always just, you know, the scenery out there is always fantastic, and you are really, truly blessed. How far are you from Plattenberg?
How far am I from where?
Plattenberg Bay. Is that far from you?
Oh, Plattenberg Bay, just a corner, just around the corner. About, I'd be lying if I gave you an exact distance, but not much more than 60 kilometers.
Okay, so you're in that very beautiful part of the world, you know, one that everyone envies. And, well, have you seen the tourists coming in already, or is that a bit too early?
Oh, no. Oh, heavens. No, they tell me that Nasna has been fully booked already since last month. So, yes, they're coming. They're coming, a lot of overseas people at the moment. And then, of course, the locals that are hoping not to be there in the very high season, which is obviously the December school holidays. So, yes, you'll be pretty full up with tourists at the moment. I think there's still an occasional little corner available. So don't despair if you haven't made your bookings yet, but do get to move on if you want to do it still this year.
I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day, and he said, you know, he had taken his family out to, you know, that most beautiful part of the country when, you know, we have this beautiful spring flower. Now, that was towards the Karoo and so forth. Have you ever been able to see that spectacle? Have you ever gone out to that part of the world where everything is in full bloom, just as winter, you know, the end of winter and the beginning of spring?
Oh, you know, I've been unfortunate. You know, they never can tell exactly when the flower display is going to be at its most intense. And I've tried a couple of times, but of course the weather being topsy-turvy and a bit unpredictable, I've been fortunate enough to catch the tail end of it once, which was absolutely stunning. But I was reliably informed that I had missed it at its best. Although I must tell you that that didn't allow to spoil it for me. I really thought it was fabulous. I thought, wow, this is as good as surely anything can get. But I was told, no, that the flowers were really at their best a couple of weeks ago. So yes, you're very lucky if you managed to catch that season right at its peak. But what a sight it is, to be sure. And people coming from all over the world to be trying to get their timing right. So yes, well, one of these years I'm going to catch it right at its peak. I've caught it just before it's really taking off and it's just starting, which is quite a wonderful time to see, because things are just sort of starting to burst into bloom. And I caught it just towards the end. But I really need to catch it right at its peak still.
And would that be the tail end of winter and the beginning of spring? When does it really happen? Because when I spoke to this gentleman, he said to me it happens round about, you know, late August, just before we've got to get into September. Is that correct?
That's correct. It really depends a lot on the rains. It's a case of the good rains come, and then it's just a matter of weeks, and the entire area, which looks like a desert at other times of the year, is just sort of in bloom. Absolutely spectacular sight. And as I say, I've been fortunate enough to get a taste of it, but not quite the prime, because somehow the rains always just didn't quite happen when they were supposed to.
So that's one of, you know, our treasures and secrets, that part of the world, and they say it's an absolute must for anyone who's a garden enthusiast, an avid gardener, wanting to go out and see what nature and how it's transformed. And like you say, but it doesn't stay for a long period of time. It's a very short window period, about 4 weeks, is that right?
That's correct, that's correct. And the peak is sort of around about in the middle, obviously. So yes, your timing needs to be right, and unfortunately nature's timing is its own timing. So you can sort of take an educated guess, and if you're lucky, you'll be right there in the middle of it and get the flowering season at its very, very best.
Now, this morning we set out to do a number of things. One, we want to talk about containers. You know, containers, you get them in all sizes, all shapes, and so forth. So tell us about container planting. Are we going to be looking both at vegetables and, you know, food, as well as aesthetics? Tell us something about the containers and container plants.
Well, I'm actually quite fond of container gardening. I do have a background growing pot plants for a living. So I suppose I've got part of it there. Back when I was a student, they always used to laugh at me. I used to work at a garden center on weekends to get a bit of experience and earn a few bucks. And what I used to do at the end of the day was I would have identified already during the course of my day which plants I wanted to take home. And I would spend most of the money I'd earned on plants, which, of course, the garden centers I helped out with was a wonderful deal. They would pay me and then I'd spend my money right away. And
you didn't get into a barter exchange. You say, well, for labor, I take so much plants.
It was something like that, really. The money used to touch my fingers and then be released again. So it pretty much was a barter kind of thing. And then I'd also sometimes sort of lay by a clock. Well, I don't have quite enough of that this week. Please put it aside for me for next week. So I really fell in love with container plants back then. And it is. It's a lovely way to garden. It's a lovely way to bring your plants indoors into your home, which has a lot of benefits, very much similar to your outdoor space. It seems that we as human beings have a natural affinity for plants. And then, of course, also wonderful for bringing plants into prominence outdoors, creating features where your plants really, really stand out, set off by an attractive pot which you yourself have chosen to suit the plant that you've got. Your showiest, most exciting plants really get showcased beautifully in containers. You can put them on, you know, verandas and things like that to soften the veranda. Very nice way of decorating. And then, of course, for those of us who lack space, you can also use containers to grow vegetables. Have a few window boxes or tray type of gardens of vegetables. It can actually look very pretty, although it might not sound like that on the radio. I wish I could show you some pictures. But yes, it can also be a very attractive way, rewarding way of gardening in containers. I've seen some people that live in apartments, don't have a lot of space, and they've really, really made use of their balcony space with shelving and containers and even vertical gardens, which are sort of becoming quite the rage these days. So lots you can do with containers, all kinds of plants, indoors, outdoors, edibles, ornamentals. It's really just up to you what you do there.
And we spoil for choices when it comes to pots. You know, at one time it was just a standard type of a pot, but these days you get them in all sizes, all shapes, and different materials. And, you know, you have them in clay pots and terracotta pots and ceramic pots. Tell us about some of those and which ones would be most advantage, and how would the person decide which pot to use?
Well, you know, look, clay or ceramic tend to be quite expensive pots. So there I would say, rather buy one big pot than several small ones. It just makes that much more impact. It's the same when you're decorating your house. If you have lots and lots of little pictures on the wall, it doesn't make as much of an impact as one really big, stunning picture. Another thing that I will warn people to look out for is drainage. Drainage is absolutely essential in pots. You need those drainage holes in the bottom. So make sure that your pots have drainage. You do get some pots that are more intended as pot covers, where you would potentially slide a less attractive plastic pot or something like that into the outer pot and just use it to hide your plastic pot. And if you put a few a bit of space between your pot and your plastic pot, let's say in the bottom of the ceramic pot, there's no problem there. You can easily create space with a few stones or something like that. It's not going to be seen, so it's invisible and it doesn't matter. And you can cover the top with a bit of sphagnum moss or something like that just to make it look like it's naturally planted. But a pot with no drainage in it is a bit trickier. So you do need to be aware, is there drainage in the bottom of your pot? Is there not drainage in the bottom of your pot? Then you have the choice between ceramics and terracotta. Ceramics being, for our purposes, let's say, the glazed pots. Now, the ceramic pots I quite like because there's something about the fact that that pot is porous. It absorbs a certain amount of water. I think that's part of it. And I find that they really work very well, especially outdoors. But the problem with your terracotta is this whole water absorption thing. So if you have it indoors and you haven't got a proper protection between it and the floor, it'll make a nasty water stain on the floor because of the moisture at the bottom of the pot, which the terracotta naturally absorbs. Ceramic pots, if you want to use them indoors, placed flat on the floor, make sure that the bottom is glazed, or else provide some sort of a pot saucer that has a glazed bottom, because you don't want that moisture busy getting into your wooden floorboards or your flooring or your carpeting or whatever. Then of course there's a lot of things one can do just being creative. And a lot of these are sort of outdoor things. One of the ones that is quite popular at the moment is planting in old shoes. I personally haven't tried it. I've seen some quite quirky arrangements that could make actually quite a fun garden feature. Another one that I quite like that I've seen around the place, quite a lot of people do it. You know, and you have at least a wheelbarrow, and the wheelbarrow starts to rust through at the bottom. So it's no longer really suitable for using around your garden. You can fill that up with some potting soil. It's now not naturally got drainage because it rusted through. And use that as a sort of a wonderful plant container which you can fill with a bounty of beautiful flowering plants. Looks like this wheelbarrow full of flowers. And you can paint the wheelbarrow a nice color, either bright or, you know, whatever grabs your fancy. And that can look really attractive. So you can get quite innovative and sort of what one can say upcycle rather than recycle containers. Upcycling is where you take something and use it in its original form without changing its form, but you repurpose it, whereas recycling is obviously you take it to be melted down or whatever. Other things that one can use more for your growing and for your propagating, things like yogurt containers. Yogurt containers are fantastic little grow-on pots. All you have to do is stick a couple of holes in the bottom. You can actually decorate them quite prettily by wrapping them or spray painting them or whatnot, so it can actually look quite attractive. Tin cans, just be careful of the sharp edge on the inside. Flatten that out with pliers or something. And also make a very attractive container. I actually quite like it when they begin to rust, which of course they do. But it gives it lots of character, sort of a rustic look, and rather pretty. So yes, a lot of, you know, the sky is really the limit of containers, and your imagination is the limit when it comes to repurposing things as containers. One that I saw that was quite cute was an old cracked teapot that was being used to grow strawberries. Very, very cute indeed. So there's a lot of things one can do with pots. And of course, when you go out there, you're very spoiled for choice with a wonderful artistic pot that you can see on sale in supermarkets and garden centres and so on.
You know, I saw someone using a bathtub, you know, the old bathtub, and like you said, they upcycle that one and they're using it in a garden. I've seen that one. I've seen, you know, garden boots, you know, that have been utilized. And the other day I was looking through a magazine, and what they had done is taken some rope or hessian rope, you know, and then wrapped it around the pot. And that looks such a stunning idea. So there's a lot that you can do with pots. Is that correct, Andrea?
There's a lot of you to putting up an ordinary cheap black plastic pot or brown plastic pot. There are so many things that one can really do there. Spray paint and a bit of art. You can really create something extraordinary. Or I love that hessian rope idea. And I would imagine hot glue would be the answer there. You can do amazing things with hot glue. I love hot glue. You would probably just use that on your pot to fasten your hessian rope on. Or you could even just get some ordinary hessian sheeting and attach that to some sort of covering for the pot. There's so many different ways of hiding that plastic and creating something really unusual. The one that I saw that was quite pretty for a small container involved two rubber bands and a whole bunch of brand new pencils. I would imagine this would make a lovely gift for a teacher or something like that, where two rubber bands were slipped around the pot and the pencils were basically just slotted in all the way around until they covered the entire pot. Also very, very pretty. I thought it very attractive. So really, again, your imagination is pretty much the limit. And as I say, hot glue, wonderful thing for gluing on different types of decoration in a relatively permanent way. Other things that I'm sure you've seen in the garden centres, these little pot mascots that you can sort of hook onto the side of pots or that are on a stick that you sort of push into the pot and you've got like a little butterfly or something like that. Really fun and crafty to try at home, you know. You know, you can use certain bought ingredients or you can look around for fun ingredients, fun materials in your own house and get a bit crafty. Make a little decoration there. Pretty it up. Why not?
Yes, I think you can spruce it up. The other trick with our pots is, you know, is how you display them to be visually, you know, pleasing. So you have a group of pots, you know, you don't sort of put the same size. You have them in varied sizes and in varied shapes and so forth. And in that way, you know, it is very attractive.
It can be very effective indeed. I personally love a group of odd numbers of pots. I think this is pretty much, it's almost like aesthetic. You know, for example, you'll buy one red rose or you'll buy three red roses if you're buying cut flowers. It's just something about odd numbers that really, really works for us visually. So five to me, it's maybe a bit of a crowd. I like groups of three, large, medium, small pot, which can be matching to a certain extent. Yes, grouping your pots, or else also if the very, very stunning plant that you really want to set apart, a nice big container all on its own can look beautiful. Two matching containers to frame a doorway or an entranceway, also very attractive. So, you know, really a lot of opportunities for design there. And just by giving your plants some height in their containers, you really do give them prominence and turn them into features, even though that particular plant might not be as noticeable if you just incorporated it in your normal beds and borders.
Now, just
an awful lot to do.
Sorry about that. You talk about the hot blue. If you put the hot blue on and thereafter, you could even just, you know, sprinkle sand. I was looking at sand, or you could even sprinkle anything fine thereafter, spray that, container, and you'd have, you know, a stunning container there. So there's so much you could do if you're wanting to be creative, and whilst you're waiting for what, you know, decide what plant to put in, you can spruce up all your pots.
That's it. I can see you're already getting your juices going. People down here, obviously, shells and maybe holiday makers as well. You know, the ladies always collecting those shells on the beach, wondering what to do with them afterwards. Glue them onto your pots. Why not? Looks gorgeous. You can also use them as a topping for your pots, you know, on top of the soil. But here with seashells, I would definitely recommend that you soak them for a few days in fresh water just to get rid of all the salts before you attempt that. One of my favorites is to take mussel shells and take a hammer and beat them all flat, so that you've got this almost like a mosaic tile type of effect. And then these mosaics, very time-consumingly, and again with hot glue, can be glued to your containers and then coated with clear varnish for a beautiful effect. I've got some that I did a couple of years ago, and they're still looking fantabulous.
Yes, I think so. There's, you know, it just depends on imagination and creativity. There's so much you could do with pots. And whilst you spoke about, you know, different types of pots and the different mediums that you can use within those, you know, to decorate those pots and to give the children, I think it would be a wonderful idea, you know, while it's school holidays, give the children some pots and give them and let them be creative. I'm sure they'll come up with something stunning.
Absolutely. Just give them a few nice materials or even send them out to go and find them themselves. You never know what they'll come up with. Kids are very creative and they love these sort of craft projects. So definitely something fun to do with your kids over the holidays, getting them to pretty up upcycled pots and so on. And yeah, they can have a lot of fun and it keeps them out of mom's hair while they're busy doing it.
And then, you know, the further advantages, we could get them now, okay, you've created the pot, let's pot something, and, you know, they look after the plant and so forth. So there's so much that we could do for children. I think just a wonderful idea. And like you said, Andrea, I think the creative juice is now flowing, and we can talk about this. I think there's so much that you could do with children, with pots, and the ideas coming through. And let your imagination just run wild, and I'm sure you'll get some wonderful and stunning end results.
You're absolutely right. You know, if you need a little bit of inspiration, just hit the internet. There is just so much out there. We can't possibly cover it all in the time we've got available to us. And, the inside of your own head, you might come up with something that nobody ever thought of before.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to go for a break. When we come back, we'll continue. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You've just tuned in. My name is Ismail Bidiaba, and welcome to all our listeners via the medium wave 1548. Satellite Islam and the audio streaming. And we've got a wonderful guest, and that's Andrea Durham, and she's given us some wonderful ideas of what we could do with containers and pots. And please, there's a wonderful idea and wonderful opportunity to get your children involved. So that was some of the ideas coming through before the break. We're now going to look at, and sometimes we forget that gifts make such stunning, I beg your pardon, plants make such stunning gifts. Andrea, help us with that.
Yes, you know, I think people don't really give plants as gifts, very seldom. When we do, it's usually, you know, oh, somebody's sick and we get them a nice flowering pot plant or something like that. But really, plants and flowers aren't just for sad occasions, they're also for happy occasions. And I think making a gift with your own hands, I think that is something very, very special and something that's very rare in this day and age. I mean, normally, you know, gifts, we head off to the shops and we get yet another toiletries gift, you know. I don't know if you've ever had one of those Christmases where you get four sets, which is great. And I mean, you use it all up eventually. But it's sort of a last resort, I don't know what to get this person kind of thing. Something that you make with your very own hands, something that you in some way arranged or created or made with your own hands, is just so much more special because it shows that you really win. There's something very special about giving plants as gifts. It's not as bad as giving someone a puppy or kitten, which is a terrible thing to do, and please don't do it. But it's a living thing, and it keeps growing and thriving and being beautiful over the years. And it gives that person pleasure for so many years to come. What can be extra, extra special is if you grew that plant yourself, and it doesn't have to be difficult. One of my favorites for plants as gifts, and it's so much fun to do as well, is to take a nice container and then choose pieces of succulents from my garden. And there's so many beautiful, beautiful succulents with such a variety of leaf shapes and leaf colors. They don't even really need to be in flower to be pretty. Now you take these and you arrange them, almost as if you were making a flower arrangement, but in potting soil. And because succulents are so easy to grow, you just need to put them outside, water them as you would water a plant that's growing, and your little succulent garden comes to life. And that's something very, very special that you created with your own hands. You've used your creativity to create a little mini garden that you can give to somebody. And they can either keep it in the pot, which they probably will do for quite a while, or else put it out in their gardens. And every time they look at it, every time those plants do something new and special and make a little flower or something like that, oh, yes, that's the plant so-and-so grew especially for me.
That's such a wonderful idea, you know, and the succulents are something that you said, you know, continue for a long period of time, and it needs very little care. So it is something that is easy to make. Any other ideas about gifting? And I like the idea you spoke about earlier on, you know, two rubber bands and then to put all those pencil colors around it. I think that's a wonderful idea. It's just something stunning and that you could give to a teacher.
Lovely for a teacher or a student, and they'll have a lifetime supply of pencils. There are lots of ways to make the plant look really, really pretty as a gift. Pay attention to everything. We've already spoken about the pots. What you can do if you don't have time to really, really decorate the pot with hot glue and what have you, is just get some nice stiff paper and then sort of wrap it around the pot, almost so that it makes a cone around the pot. Looks quite nice if you take one corner of the paper towards the top, to really sort of make it almost like a cornet of attractive, colourful cardboard around there. Nice big satin bow, or you could use the plastic. Make it nice big bow around it, just to make it look more presenty. And then also, of course, the surface of the soil that you can pretty up with pebbles that you pick up yourself or that you go and buy. One of the ones I love is, you know, you get these scratch patches where you can get little semi-precious stones. You can get sort of a whole bank packet full of them for about 30 rand. And for something really, really special, I love busy getting a whole bunch of tiger's eyes or something really pretty and putting that on the surface of the pot. Really just adds that very, very nice special touch. Yes, as I said, well, succulents, lovely way to gift plants to people. Those that are keener gardeners might like to do a little bit more of the work themselves. So what you can also do is just pop down and get to the garden centre, get a whole bunch of seeds that you can give them, and they can sort of sow them on the time that they need them. And that's sort of fun. I love it, you know, open a package of these seeds and gardening gloves and things like that, and it gets me really, really excited. Little bonsai trees, also a lovely, lovely one to give as gifts. And, you know, you can make them yourself. You can grow little trees from seed, and then it's just a matter of putting it all up in a pot, and there you go. Lovely gift. So you can actually turn your hobby into something that brings pleasure to your friends as well as to you.
Thank you very much. I've got a couple of queries and questions that have come through. They wanted to know about stevia, the use of stevia. How would one use it once it is in a pot, and what would be the best way to use the stevia plant?
Well, you know, I've never been fortunate enough to actually come across a stevia plant. I'm going to be honest with you. I know what it's used for. I know that it's used as a sweetener. But that's about the extent that I know about it, I'm afraid to say. So, yeah, I can't really give you much on that one.
Okay, the next one about a comfrey. What are the benefits of comfrey and how should comfrey be treated?
Oh, lots of things that comfrey is good for, which is very well known for its healing properties. But you have to be a little bit careful with taking that plant internally, because it apparently can withdraw iron from the body, something like that. But I have definitely read that you need to be careful about using it. I would consult with your doctor if you're planning to take it internally. But the way I've seen a lot of people using it is to take the leaves with hot water and make a sort of a poultice and put that then externally on things like inflamed joints, you know, injured muscles and so on. And then this poultice apparently really, really speeds up the healing. With broken bones, it's apparently supposed to help to speed healing. But I would warn anybody who's thinking of taking this internally to at least discuss it with your doctor, because there are things about that particular plant that can make it dangerous to use. Okay, well, chamomile's a lovely herb to have in the garden, and beautiful self-seeding, makes lovely little white flowers, and it has a lovely flower that turns into a very relaxing tea that can help you to sleep better at night. I think that's how most people use it. They like the chamomile for sleeping better at night, and very, very nice for making a hair rinse or a facial rinse for the ladies who like to keep themselves looking beautiful.
Now, is there any other, you know, they normally talk about the plant that would help. Now, I know there's no cure for cancer, but the, you know, there's a particular bush that they refer to. Do you know anything about that?
Well, there are a few plants that are supposed to have anti-cancer properties. Whether as prevention or whether they might sort of help to prevent spread or so on, I think a lot of this is still under research. The one that you're referring to is the cancer bush, which is actually a very attractive bush to grow in your garden. It's quite widely grown for the herbal supplements industry. But I believe there hasn't been much research done yet on the purported anti-cancer properties of the plant. However, you know, if you're sick, you want to try everything that might possibly work, and I do understand that. Again, very important to talk to your doctor, especially if you're using medication, which I assume if you have cancer, you will be, because there can be clashes with medication. Another plant that's said to have very strong anti-cancer properties is aloe, interestingly enough, and I know we've spoken about aloe ferox and its healing properties almost to death, but apparently that is also one of the things that it can do. And there is a research study that showed some sort of effect from using aloe arborescence juice, also a species of aloe, which the crant's vein, quite a bushy aloe that's grown. And you'll find some information on that. I will say to people, when you're researching this kind of thing online, do take everything you read with a pinch of salt. There is unfortunately a lot of misinformation out there on the internet, primarily intended to sell products and to sell books. So be a little bit, be a little bit suspicious of the information you find and take it with a pinch of salt. But yes, indeed, there are plants that are said to have anti-cancer properties. And in fact, some of our vegetables that we eat every day, anything contains antioxidants. And that really, really covers just about any healthy vegetable plant. Is said to have a certain degree of anti-cancer activity because of the action of clearing free radicals, which in turn promote unhealthy conditions and illness. So yes, I would definitely not want to say that there's any plant that cures cancer. For skin cancer, by the way, one that I have actually seen working, and I was quite impressed with, was Kygelia. But there we had to buy a cream from the health shop. And Kygelia is the sausage tree, and I'm not quite sure how they extracted this gel from it. But it certainly seemed to heal the little melanoma. It was going to be burnt off, but then the doctor said, well, try it and see if this cream does the trick. And it did. So yes, I believe that there are plants out there with anti-cancer properties, but we do have to remember that any really serious claims, as in this will cure cancer, are probably very much exaggerated, because if it did, everybody would be doing it, wouldn't they?
Definitely, definitely. And let's just go on, you know, I have a query about wild garlic and how do you plant ginger. Is there any benefit in planting wild garlic?
Wild garlic?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, the wild garlic is actually very, very helpful, a very useful plant. A lot of people don't realize you can actually replace the ordinary clove garlic, which is a lot harder to grow, by the way. I'm growing some, it's doing quite well, but the wild garlic is much quicker, much easier, and actually has a stronger flavor. The only thing with using it in cooking is to remember that it has a stronger flavor and to use considerably less of it. It also has the same sort of antibiotic properties as garlic, which is obviously famed as a healthful plant. And my wild garlic grows faster than I can use it. I do use it in my cooking. I love it on my roast potatoes. Just do use it sparingly because it is very, very, very strong flavored. So cut it up fine and sprinkle it thin. But yes, definitely the wild garlic, I use the leaves primarily. Because of that very, very strong flavor, you can use the little bit at the bottom. But I find that just a little bit too strong. So I generally just harvest a few leaves, chop that up fine, put that into my cooking, and it's just as good as the cultivated garlic, which is a lot harder to grow.
So that's the one that has a purple flower on the top, is that correct?
That's correct. You also get a little white form, but it's much, much scarcer. So yes, most of us will notice the one with the purple flower. The flowers, by the way, are tasty too, and very, very nice in salads. It's almost like a sweet flavor mixed with garlic. Hard to explain. Go and try it in your own garden. Have a nibble of the flower and see what you think.
The other one about ginger, how do you grow ginger? Is there a particular way to grow ginger?
Look, ginger is an incredible healing plant. There's several major tomes on herbal medicine where you'll find ginger under just about every possible heading of things that it can really benefit for. And even just as a general health tonic, ginger is absolutely wonderful plant to grow, and obviously for spicing and foods. To grow ginger, I would buy, and you won't always be lucky, unfortunately, because of you don't know how these things are stored. If you're lucky enough to find garlic root in your vegetable shop that's already sprouting.
That's ginger roots. I beg your pardon, we're talking ginger, not garlic.
Ginger roots.
Mm-hmm.
If you find ginger roots that are already sprouting, which you'd be quite lucky to find. If you do find that, then you know, this is a surefire bet. Alternatively, you'll just have to buy a nice, healthy-looking root, take it home, and leave some of it to sprout, and hope that it will sprout. Again, that really, really depends on how it has been looked after while it was stored, and that you unfortunately can't know. But if you're lucky enough to get a piece sprouting, it's wonderful because you can sort of cut it up into sections, because it's sort of like a long root, and it will sprout on places on the root where the nodes are. And if you can get it to sprout, then you can easily plant the pieces out in your garden. I usually get them sprout out of the ground, because otherwise you might just be wasting it. Unfortunately, as I say, the ginger that one buys in the veggie shop doesn't always sprout as you would like it to. But when you're lucky enough to get that happening, go for it and plant. It will take a while before your plants are ready for harvest, because those roots really have to have a bit of time to grow and thicken up. I wouldn't even think of looking to see whether they're ready to harvest for at least those 2 years, and possibly longer. But very attractive plant. And you can mix it in with your ornamental plant. It's perfectly at home. It's got very attractive flowers and very foliage. So a very nice plant to grow in your garden, and really an investment in the longer term. Well worth doing.
And the question coming through, do you need any particular type of soil for that?
Well, as with any plant with a fleshy root, I would say that if your soil is poorly drained, your root will tend to rot. So you don't want too soggy of a soil. But I think in South Africa, there are a few places in some gardens, especially in this part of the world, where the southern slopes are very damp and very poorly drained. But it's less common of a problem. Ideally, you want well-drained soil. And a bit of compost never goes amiss. Certainly in my soil, the ginger really, really thrives. I've got a little patch that I managed to get sprouted from a root, and it's really, really doing very, very well. It does need good light. So if it's getting shade, definitely not all day long, ideally sunshine.
And the depth that you have to plant it?
Well, I like to let it make those little green sprouts, and then I'll put them in a pot with just a little green sprout sticking out, and let it get a little bit bigger before putting it in my garden, just so it doesn't get lost, you know. And then once it's a little bit stronger, I would plant it to the same depth that it's basically growing. Plants are very clever. They're sort of able to sort themselves out to a large degree.
And the final question, something someone's asked about the moringa. Are you aware of the moringa plant, and is there any benefit to that?
Moringa?
Moringa, I think that's the way it's said.
Yes, I have heard about it, and I've heard that there are benefits, but I don't know it.
That's fine. But thank you very much for sharing, and thanks, Andrea. You take care. Thank you very much for all the information. It's just wonderful to have you on the air, and I've learned so much, and so have our listeners. I will be chatting to you again. You take care. Thanks, Million.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Andrea Durham giving us some wonderful ideas of what we could do with pots, and giving us some wonderful ideas of how we could use them and gift them as well. And I spoke about some of the herbs. Remember, if you are taking any of these things, to check with your health practitioner, your doctor, before you take any of them, especially if you're going to use them internally, and make sure that you have the correct advice before deciding that you're going to use them. That's all for me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.